Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about Spider-Man reshaping the world, as well as reviews of Ice Cream Man. And we're going to talk a lot about, can we ever trust streamers and networks ever again? All right, we'll explain when we get there, but let's get on with the show. Aaron Peterson joining me today. I'm the host, Troy Heinrichs.
What's up?
Kyle Nolan from NoReruns.net returns again.
Hello, hello.
I'm sorry. maybe we should just start calling you Amanda's replacement at this point. Jesus. Not to give her some excuse, but Amanda had a death in the family, so she is out for the next couple weeks, just so you know. But thanks, Kyle, for always being there for her, always having a reason why she couldn't be here.
No problem.
Now, Troy and I, we're going to be checking obituaries just to make sure things are accurate and up to date. You know, got to be fair. Just
you're like doing that. I'm taking her at her word. That's all on you.
I want a picture. I want proof of, well, shit.
Yeah, proof of life doesn't work.
Sorry. Horrible people. What's up with you guys? What's new? Both of you went and saw Spider-Man? Am I correct about this?
Hell yeah.
Yep. Not in 3D, of course.
Well, that's just silly. I was wondering, did he swing at your face when you're doing that?
There was only one scene that felt like pop out. But, I mean, you also get the nice, when he's, like, hanging over a building and over the city, you see, like, that depth, and you get that sort of, like, Fear of Heights type of thing.
Okay, so. This is a serious question. For anyone that doesn't know, Kyle Nolan is addicted to 3D, like, addicted. He literally has to buy everything in 3D. He goes and sees everything in 3D. Like, it's three. You really like that extra dimension, and I don't understand why. It's a cool gimmick. Like, would you still, if Jaws 3D came out and re-released, would you go see that?
It already did, and I did. Oh, wait, no. That was the first one. Sorry. Yeah, but I do own Jaws 3D on 3D Blu-ray, and I have watched it that way.
Oh, my God. It's probably the worst 3D movie ever made.
Does that mean you have a 3D television?
Oh, I still have two 3D televisions. I have a spare in case something goes wrong.
See? That's what I'm saying. Dedication. So what is the appeal? Just the depth? Just because you like things flying at your face? Because I could take that so many different ways.
Yeah, I think it's a depth. I especially like it in the animated stuff. I think the animated stuff, because it's in the nature when they're actually building the models and things there, it's already in there in 3D. So when they render it in 3D, it just looks amazing to me. The live action stuff, lesser so, but if it's a 3D animated movie, I definitely want to see it that way.
Yeah, those are really cool. And space. 3D in space is always really great as well.
But is it really better than just seeing it in 2D? I mean, because here's why I say that, not to sidetrack, it's before we even start, but every time I see 3D, I stop paying attention to the 3D 15 minutes into it. It really just never lasts.
It's just natural. You just blend into it and don't even notice
it. I don't feel like I'm there. I never feel like I'm on Tatooine or wherever the hell Avatar's at.
Go watch Gravity in 3D. You'll never want to go to space ever.
How am I going to watch Gravity in 3D? It's been out
I
of
have the 3D
20,
Blu-ray oh, and a 3D TV.
Yeah. I got a Kyle's house.
You got to go to
Boston and then go to Kyle's house, and I can finally watch Gravity in 3D.
Terrifying. It was terrifying.
That's funny. Well, I guess I'll take your word on that. I don't know if I can get behind all this, but you know, I'm glad you enjoy it, and they're still making them, so obviously people are still going to it. But isn't there a big difference between when they convert it to 3D versus they actually just, it's naturally shot that way?
Yeah, I think that's generally why I prefer the 3D animated stuff, because that's more natural than the converted after the fact.
It blends. Hey, I want to mention, I just thought this is kind of a cool anniversary. Talladega Nights just had its 20th anniversary this week, and I watched The Hawk on Netflix, and that's terrible. So I want, I'm just kind of curious if you think, like, Talladega Nights is peak Will Ferrell. I think he's been chasing that Adam McKay combo magic he used to have with director Adam McKay before they broke up as friends or whatever. I think he's been chasing this high ever since, and I don't think he's come close to the Talladega Nights era since.
For me, the peak is Elf. Like, I'm sorry, but Elf is my Will Ferrell movie.
Best movie?
I've never really been a fan of the Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly movies.
I mean, Holmes and Watson, you know, remove that one from the list, but no Step Brothers, no...
Oh, Step Brothers, I can't stand. Those two, I found so annoying. But yeah, even like Talladega Nights, I think I've seen it once. I've never felt the need to go back and rewatch it.
Well, we're not talking to you anymore. How about you, Troy?
Elf, I've seen a million times. That's a classic.
I mean, Elf is a classic. I'm not a super fan of Elf, to be honest. But I think Anchorman is still his best comedic take. Mm. But that's probably like top. Talladega Nights is probably two. Step Brothers is probably three. But I really think his performance in the Lego Movie as President Business is actually his best movie.
It was pretty good.
He balanced the comedy as President Business with the seriousness. And then as it transitions, you know, towards the end of the movie, I think he did a really great job, you know, showing more of a range of acting, not just relying on the stupid humor.
I do think his version of idiotic arrogance, I guess is what I would call it, is not funny anymore. And I don't know if it's because he did it so much that literally that's the only character I feel like he does anymore, or if that's just the shtick wore off, you know, because Jim Carrey I find still funny quite often, you know, even in, you know, that stupid Sonic the Hedgehog series, which I never enjoyed the series that much, but I think he's great. Like, he's working his ass off. But
like, Will Ferrell, I think, almost was the thing that could have ruined Barbie when he was.
Yeah, when he came on, it took me out of the movie completely.
It took me completely out of the movie.
I get it.
And I do like this. I do like the songs in Spirited, but I think Will was the wrong choice to put in Spirited for that movie. It didn't work for me.
You love that movie.
I do love the movie. I love the story. I love the music. I always said Will Ferrell was the worst choice for that movie.
He couldn't sing that, you know.
Right, exactly.
Well, speaking of 20-year anniversaries, I'm gonna pivot because it's actually the 20th anniversary this year of a little TV movie I like to call Desperation, which is terrible. It's an absolutely abysmal movie. TV movie, actually. It's not even a real movie. They couldn't even make the, you know, get it in theaters. But that said, it's my favorite Stephen King book. I love that book. And if you don't know what Desperation is, it's, you know, a collection of characters, the writer and a whole bunch of other guys that are going up against the evil forces. And they're all led by this sheriff who is basically possessed by a demon. And it's a great story, but Stephen King at the time also wrote a flip side of the book called The Regulators, which is the same characters, different scenario. So it's kind of like they use the same people, but they're in different parts, if you will. And the story is completely different. It's just kind of a unique dichotomy. And now they are doing, finally, a feature film adaptation of this. And it's so exciting to me because Sam Raimi is producing it and it's going to be directed by the duo who did Bloodlines, the Final Fantasy Bloodlines movie, which was actually pretty thrilling a couple of years
ago. It was. Yeah. It was.
So what do you think as my fellow Stephen King-aholic, Troy? What do you think? Desperation? You love it?
I think, yeah, Sam Raimi, I think, is a great choice for this one in particular. I feel like it's been a minute since we've had like a good King movie on the screen. So we've had a couple remakes, right? We had the Pet Sematary remake. You know, Carrie's been done a couple times. So I think that this one...
Well, I mean, Life of Chuck. You got to give Life of Chuck.
It's also The Long Walk.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Recently. But Life of Chuck is like that, like, feels like it's more like that Stand By Me versus like true, pure King.
I would say that there's been so many...
Cracked out on evil.
There's so many adaptations of it. It's probably hard to tell when they came out.
Right.
But Mike Flanagan, I think that's all he does anymore exclusively, outside of helping Henry Cavill do the Warhammer series, which he actually just signed on us to help with the storyline there.
Just to block the Dark Tower?
Yeah, but definitely not doing Dark Tower yet. But he's doing Warhammer 40,000, which is going to require immense time since he's already got a Carrie series and a bunch of other things. So I'm actually glad Mike Flanagan's not involved with this one, but sorry I cut you off.
No, I just think anytime we can get good King adapted and maybe even change the ending because King has... notoriously issues ending his books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to change that ending. This is fun. That ending's perfect.
Yeah, that was good.
Tack.
I'm happy. I'm excited.
I can't. Dude, this is like some of the most exciting news of this year for me. I don't know if that's weird or what, but I've been waiting for like a feature film adaptation of Desperation for a long time. I know they won't ever come close to what I experienced when I read that book, but that is probably my second favorite book of all time next to The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And, you know, and I love, I had somebody online, of course, when I said, this is my favorite Stephen King book. And they're like, this is your favorite. Because originally, I think they thought I said favorite book overall. And he's like, well, if this is your favorite book, then you obviously don't read much, which I just love that answer. I'm like, just because I don't like what you like, man, that doesn't mean that I don't read much. I just happen to love that book. Like, it hit me at the right time, right spot, barreled through it. I've read it 3 or 4 times. I don't reread books very often. I love that book.
I'm sure that person's favorite book was Dreamcatcher. We see you, Duddits. I got you.
The Duddits. God, what a terrible movie.
Terrible movie.
That's such a terrible movie.
Caterpillars alone.
So, Well, guys, I'm pretty excited. We're going to talk a little bit more about Spider-Man Brand New Day a little later. We were going to try to get this in for last week's episode, but it was Comic-Con. We need to get the Comic-Con episode out closer to when Comic-Con happened, so had to come out before Spider-Man. But holy crap, everybody's probably sick of hearing about Spider-Man Brand New Day by now, because it is the most popular thing in the whole wide world. In fact, I'm going to give you some records. So it made $1 billion. I had the wrong number. It's $1 billion over 6 days worldwide. It had the biggest opening weekend in history with $360 million, surpassing Avengers Endgame, which was $357 million. Largest opening ever for a Spider-Man film. It topped Spider-Man No Way Home's $260 million. This made $100 million more with two less Spider-Men. That's all I'm saying. Two less Spider-Men.
And one less Aunt May.
Wow. Yes, and one less Aunt May.
And no Uncle Ben.
No, still no Uncle Ben. Still no goddamn Uncle Ben. Aunt May has taken the place of Uncle Ben. And Marissa Tomei, you know what? I'm starting to not be mad about it. Fastest Spider-Man to get to $1 billion, to get to, you know, a bunch of others. And it's important to note, like, Spider-Man was the first superhero to get $100 million on a weekend. It was the first superhero to get to $150 million for a weekend. Then he was part of Infinity War and Endgame, which also set records. I'm just throwing out there, like, you can debate it all you want. You can have Superman. Batman comes pretty close. There's Wonder Woman. But I think it's pretty fair to say Spider-Man is the most popular superhero in the world in films. Do you agree or disagree?
I mean, I really enjoy him. He's your friendly neighborhood superhero. So.
Okay, Troy, calm down. trying to jam that joke in. We get it. It was amazing. I get it. What do you think? Like, seriously.
No, I always enjoy these because I think it has that nice blend of like humor and the action and the drama. So it's a lot more like what I like in these superhero. I hate like the dark, dark, dark superhero movies. And that's what I like about these. The Spider-Man is there is that lighter side to it. And he's also just like a somewhat normal person just happens to have like some special powers.
And I think Spider-Man also is just more, I don't know, it's more cool for the kids in a way. It was great watching the girls, the little girls dress up in their Wonder Woman costumes when first Wonder Woman came out. And it felt like there was like a reinvigoration at that point in time. But like Superman and Batman movies have been around since we were kids, mm-hmm. right? So to see like Superman and Batman still in the theater today, it's kind of like we didn't really see Spider-Man in the movie theater until the 2000s. So it's still a relatively newer movie superhero. We had obviously the TV shows and the comics and cartoons and whatnot. But like, I think it's still kind of fresh in a way.
It was 20 years after Superman and what, 11 after Batman. So yeah, I could see what you're saying.
But also at the same time, it's also like Toby played first. Holland's been playing Spider-Man for what, over a decade now. Mm-hmm. So I think, and then, you know, him being in there for this long and the people that are obviously following the whole Holland Zendaya getting married, the saga, right? All that extra stuff that comes with social media, like just popularizes the character even more because Tom's in that particular role.
And seems like a genuine dude.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, ripped. That helps.
Ripped genuine dude.
He's definitely got some abs. Yeah. And by the way, shout out to Florence Pugh for making me want to not work remote anymore. If you get that reference, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to go into the office. I think Spider-Man has been the most popular character for the last quarter century. And I remember when Spider-Man was just Nicholas Hammond crawling around on a camera that was tilted, you know, 90 degrees to make it look like he was climbing up a wall when it was really just running around on the floor. So, I mean, it's nice to keep seeing the effects take hold. And this was, for me, the first Spider-Man movie that really felt like the Spider-Man I grew up with. And I know a lot of people, I've said this many times, I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole, but I hated that they left out Uncle Ben. Kyle knows. And I also,
they all know.
I can go on this tangent again, but I felt less bad about it this time, but also that he was never able to be on his own. Like, it was always, he had to rely on everybody, Tony Stark's tech and, you know, other heroes to help him and da 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 da. Like, it was never his movie. We finally have his movie and look how popular it is. And I'm sure it's an extension of Tom Holland, but the fact that it's making more than the movie that reunited the other two nostalgia guys, like, there's almost zero nostalgia in this movie. I mean, I guess maybe Punisher, but I don't think Punisher's really pulling in the perps. You know what I mean? Hulk, maybe. Black Widow, or not Black Widow, but, you know, Florence Pugh, maybe. But I don't think there's anything in here that's going to be a massive draw except for Spider-Man. And it's just, he's the guy. He's the guy to beat at this point. It does make me ask you, though, you know, a lot of people keep saying comic book movies, they're old hat, they're tired, they're done. This proves that that's not true. But also, you did have Supergirl flop totally earlier this year. I think that has more to do with people didn't want a Supergirl movie. Nothing against the character. It's just, they just had a Superman movie last year. They're just supered out, right? Which is going to tie into our next talking point. But before we get there, do you think this kills that argument that superhero movies are fading? Or do you think all it does is reinforce that if you have to be a top tier superhero to get people to go to the theater?
I think that what the difference in Spider-Man is that it doesn't feel like a superhero movie. It feels like it's a human movie that there might be some, you know, external powers or external strength, but like Fisk isn't a superhero, right? The Punisher is not a superhero. These are real people doing real things that maybe would run across a mystical thing, you know, like the Hand or something have some mystical powers in their leader, but it feels more grounded than like, oh, it's an alien. Oh, it's a genetically mutated blah, blah, blah. Like, this feels like we could see these people on an everyday basis walking down the street trying to be a vigilante solving crimes. Like, that's why Batman was always cool, because Batman didn't have superpowers. He had good tech. It's more relatable.
It's also set in a city instead of on some other random planet that with aliens and things. So it does
there's that. Yeah.
So it does appeal more towards people that maybe don't like superhero aliens and sci-fi. Like, it's definitely more of a story about this guy who happens to be able to shoot webs out of his hand. I mean, even that, it's like technology that he's using.
Yeah. And it grounds the movie, I think, in practical effects in a way, even though there is a lot of CGI, obviously, with the swinging and whatnot and the fight sequences, but it still feels like it's in reality versus like a completely green screen type movie.
Yeah, it is odd how you do have that feeling. I think they did an excellent job with the effects, by the way, this time. Like, I mean, and also taking pages of the comics straight out of the comics and throwing them on the screen. I mean, if you're a longtime fan, which I'm sure there are people listening that are, it's amazing to me how many they captured, how many actual, like, the Spider-Man Scorpion fight, things like that. Like, they had a lot of screen covers recreated in the movie, which is phenomenal if you're a longtime fan.
Like, the slow motion freeze frames, I was like, is Zack Snyder here? Like,
oh, you shut like, your mouth. You shut your mouth.
And I was like, and I was like, no, he's not. Because this is when slow motion actually worked for the right. Like, those, when he's like going up against the Hand and then they're flying through the air. I was like, damn, that's a cool freaking shot.
Such great shots in this movie. Great shots. Speaking of, did you know Zack Snyder is rumored? It's not a fact. I don't like reporting anything. It's a rumor, but you can't just walk away from it. You know, Zack Snyder's rumored to be being talked to by Marvel to maybe helm a film.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, walk away. We don't need that. I don't think we need that. So speaking of DC and their bad ideas, I like some of the Snyder movies. Don't write me. But DC is going forward with a Jimmy Olsen spinoff series. I don't know why. And he's an investigative reporter chasing around Gorilla Grodd. I think we briefly talked about this. He's a telepathic ape. I just want to know, like, how confident are you in James Gunn's vision at this point? I know everybody was happy with Superman. That felt like easy pickings. This feels a lot more like, I don't know anybody that would want this. I just don't. This feels like such a CW kind of show. And they're still going forward, even though Supergirl flopped.
Well, they did do Gorilla Grodd on the Flash CW show.
Exactly. It's a CW concept, man. I can't imagine it works anywhere but there.
But they did. I mean, I question it, but then Peacemaker was so entertaining that I give him some leeway that if he can somehow recapture that kind of mix of humor and action, then maybe it'll be decent. But the whole Gorilla Grodd is the piece that is throwing me off. I could see like a Jimmy Olsen series doing an investigative reporter. It's the Gorilla Grodd piece that is just weird to me.
It's definitely weird.
I enjoyed the Jimmy Olsen that was on Smallville back in the day, which was also a CW show, because they gave him episodes where he did his own thing, and that was fun, but it was like normal, everyday crime-fighting type stuff. So really, at that point, it's just any other TV detective cop show. So there's nothing special there. But to answer your question, like, I thought Superman was just okay.
What? Okay, Superman was a very good movie. You didn't like it?
It was a good movie. It wasn't like, wow, Superman, you know?
Yeah, I'm with Troy on that one.
I mean, Christopher Reeve is always going to be my Superman. Like,
as he should.
You know, the second movie is probably the one, you know, against Zod. That's one that goes down in the history books forever as probably the best Superman movie, but it was just okay. So yeah, so from a gun perspective, yeah.
You're not sure. I'm not sure.
I think it's a DC thing. I think DC does better when it's a TV series. I think like everything that we did with the Flash and Central City Underground was the podcast. But what was it? No Tomorrow. What was the sister show? Legend of Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Smallville and Green Arrow. Like that was a great run for DC. Like, the only thing we were missing was a Batman show and a Wonder Woman show. And if we would have had those, I think it would have been a great run.
I'm stunned that James Gunn still hasn't put a Wonder Woman or a Batman movie that's actually a DC proper universe out in the ether. Like, your first thought was to go to Supergirl. I have no idea why you think that would be successful. And now you're talking about a Jimmy Olsen investigative doc. There's just nothing about this that appeals to me. Lanterns, I'm with you. I think Lanterns might actually work, but I also think Lanterns would be better as a film, personally. I think more people would have went to see it, as long as Ryan Reynolds is not in it.
I actually enjoyed that one, and I own it in 3D.
Green Lantern?
Yeah,
have a problem. Legitimately, I'm starting to concern. I think maybe you need an intervention of some sort. Like, that's a lot of 3D, and there's some bad 3D in there.
Ryan Reynolds doesn't even make that better 3D.
No, he hates it, or he likes making fun of it. I don't know, one of the two. All right, we're gonna move on, but I do want to mention, so the Mummy revival, you know, that's coming out from Radio Silence, the guy that did the Scream revival, you know, they are making a Brendan Fraser's coming back, and that's Matt Bettinelli Ulfin and Tyler Gillett. They're the directors on this. And Brendan Fraser's returning as Rick O'Connell, and Rachel Weisz is coming back, and John Hannah is coming back. And now they have confirmed that, I don't know how this is possible, but Kevin J. O'Connor, who was in the first Mummy, is coming back as Benny. But I don't know how that's going to work, because I'm pretty sure he died in the first Mummy. And then, of course, you've got Oded Fehr is coming back. So that's exciting. I'm very happy about Ardeth coming back, but I don't understand the Benny thing other than he was a fun component of the first movie, but I guess maybe he'll be a mummy, be the joke. So
we're making Star Wars 7. It was basically Star Wars 4.
I think so. Yeah, it's a Mummy 4. They're going to pretend 3 didn't happen, and they're going to... I remember they're going to... You know, I don't think they show Benny dying, though, right? Like, maybe didn't he get trapped in the tomb or something?
I thought the carob spiders, like, clawed all over him, but maybe that transforms you into something else.
Yeah, maybe. I can't wait to see it. I just think it's great that they're going to... The gang's all back, if you will.
But then it goes to that question of, are we relying too much on nostalgia in order to make shit happen?
Yes, we are. Yep. Yep. That's just a fact at this point.
I'm okay. I liked Rachel Weisz and Brendan Fraser together, and I thought they could have been like a power couple action series after the first movie.
Boy, has that changed since then, though, huh?
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a different look now. All right, so now we're going to move into our From the Outside In topic. All right, guys, so Wonder Man was recently renewed for season 2 on Disney Plus. That's exciting, except it was just canceled right before the writer's room fired up. So this keeps happening. I think we've talked about this, I don't know how many times, where their shows, they're either left on cliffhangers and they're axed, or they're, you know, now we're getting shows that are renewed that we can get excited about and look forward to, and now they're getting axed, and obviously, you know, nobody owes us nothing. But as fans, I'm getting really tired of freaking devoting my time to TV shows when they don't care about giving you any kind of closure. Does this bother you that we still give them, we still allow them to hurt us?
Definitely bothers me, especially when, like, this past year, I was watching a bunch of new Peacock shows, and almost every single one ends in a cliffhanger. And then you're disappointed because you know not everything's going to get renewed, and like, why don't they just give it a proper ending and not do this? Well, recently it was in the news that The Rookie, like, when they were doing their season 8 finale, they filmed some alternate ending because they were ending on a cliffhanger. I wish every show would do that. Like, film something that gives closure in case they decide that, hey, we're not going to actually renew this.
Or better yet, do like what most cable, HBO, Showtime, Apple TV, etc., where you have a singular season story. Even Veronica Mars had a singular season story. They could have ended after.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing ends on the first thing. You always can set up something in the future. Like, Dark Matter is a great example on Apple TV, right? Dark Matter was supposed to only be one season. Dark Matter ended the story. There were threads that you're like, oh, that could be a great possibility if there was a spinoff, or if there was a second season, or if there was a movie or whatever. But you don't have to come back to it. You could also, it worked just leaving you wondering what the possibility of those stories were. Like, that's the way you write into it. So that way, if a second season were to happen, you have the threads, but you don't necessarily need the threads to continue, and you can feel like you watched a whole complete thing. Burrows is a great example. I don't need any more Burrows. It'd be fun.
Oh, I disagree with you on that one, but I understand.
The story itself was done, you know?
That's the advantage, is I'm okay with the way that one ended, because you did feel like you got an ending. And yeah, they tease what could come, so I'm okay with that because it still works in the context of I can walk away from it and I've got something. It's when, you know, either they promise me something, like they renew the goddamn thing, or they leave this massive cliffhanger where you have no freaking closure. I'm just like, I'm getting, and I say this all the time because people are like, well, how can you quit a show after 2 episodes or 3 episodes when it's such a great show? Because they quit on me all the time. Like, at some point, my mental health is way more important than theirs. Like, I'll find another show to watch. I'll be fine. I promise you, I'm missing nothing. And there's so many people that are, like, just going to be waiting now for so long in their lives for, like, 47 shows to maybe make a comeback, maybe finalize that one storyline they've been waiting on.
Yeah, there definitely should be a no take backs clause when they renew something. No take backs. Because that's just absurd. Because you get everyone's hopes up, you get all the actors' hopes up, you get all the writers' hopes up, and then you just cancel it when they could have been looking for some other job while they thought they were actually renewed. But yeah, that I always find absurd when they renew something and then take it back. Like, at that point, you've already committed. Like, go ahead and make that season.
But I feel like I have not had this problem in anything that I've watched. So I don't know if it's a Peacock thing because they're making so much content for that streamer, but most of the content is also like repurposed on NBC or USA or Sci-Fi. So Peacock, it still fits that traditional broadcast type model where they might have had pilots that they wanted to bring onto the main networks, and then the pilots didn't, you know, pan out for the main network, but oh, we could throw it on Peacock, you know, because it'll get a new subscriber to come into the service. But it's written as traditional television with that intention to be on the air forever, where you have purposely built TV shows for things like HBO and Apple TV, where they're literally written as that one season done story with the threads for a potential if it were to come back.
I don't know if you're trying to defend Peacock, but you'd be wrong, because Ponies, Copenhagen Test, Poker Face, these are three off the top of my head.
Like, there's also Teacup, and I don't know if Hysteria, if that ended in a...
So they all do it, is all I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it's across the board. I mean, you don't watch those, that's fair. But those were definitely created for Peacock. I mean, Ponies in particular, I know a lot of people that are just pissed because they love that show and it ended on an absolute cliffhanger. I haven't finished it. I've watched like an episode. I saw it got canceled. Saw it was a cliffhanger. Said, well, I guess I'm out of that one. But I was liking it.
Oh, I watch it and I'm one of those people that was upset because it is a major cliffhanger that they leave it on. Like,
or maybe it's just
you gonna jump on another one now?
Well, no, like maybe it's executive branch.
Not Apple, though. Troy's not gonna go after Apple. They always end up perfect. They got the greatest endings, best endings ever.
But like Silo last season, right, was a cliff.
See?
I guess you'd call it a cliffhanger, even though it did resolve the story. But it was a cliffhanger. Like, did they live? Did they not live? Like, who survived? Who didn't survive? What happened at the end of the rebellion? But Apple, long before the season started, said season 3 was coming. So I think it's a matter of you have to get out of this, save it for sweeps and save it for this and make it a surprise and just be up in front and honest. Like, we already know that season 5 of Silo is going to be the, or season 4 of Silo is going to be the end, and we know it's going to air next summer. So I'm not worried about the end of season 3 being a cliffhanger because I already have season 4 confirmed.
But that
confirm
is
it before the season starts.
Absolutely. But that is why you should, if it's a one season or two season show, it should always have a fixed ending. Like, I just don't believe in cliffhangers anymore. I've gotten to the point where number one, I normally wait until a show actually arrives and completes before I start watching it, because I want to make sure, number one, it's gonna be worth my time all the way through, because I'm getting tired of getting burned. And it's not like I don't watch them all at once necessarily. It's just, I get tired of being burned by getting halfway through a show, and then it either ends and they don't renew it and there's no ending, or it becomes garbage as it goes because it was really a story that should have been told in half the time, which happens a lot. There's a lot of these eight episodes. They can't even flesh that out. Like, remember when they used to do this over 22? You can't even make eight solid episodes. But there's a lot of that too. So I like to wait. And also I want to make sure that there's no cliffhanger, because I'm not going to do it. It's probably why I love the Reacher books, because I always get an ending and every single one is different and the series followed suit. I like shows that give me an ending. 24 did it fantastic. Still took what happened the previous year, but it built on it, but every season ended at the end. Like, you got 24, you're done. Your plot's resolved. You might get a little teaser, but if it never comes back, like it never did, so Jack's still in a Russian prison, but I still feel okay about it. Not for him. I kind of feel like he should have broke out by now, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we all knew Westworld was supposed to get a fifth season, but yet at the end of season 4, we're like, oh, it got canceled. Okay, but it stands alone.
Yeah.
It fits.
The ending works. Fine. And I think each one of their seasons actually kind of stand alone in their own way. So
even Bokenkamp show, which was, no offense to Bokenkamp, right? More network than what Apple TV typically is.
Last Frontier.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the first season was a solid, you know, open, shut, closed. It had some threads where it could have continued if it went on. It didn't go on, but I felt very fine just having that limited series.
I was actually, don't tell him I said this, but I was kind of happy that it didn't come back, because I'm like, that one's a stretch to come back. that was a little bit of a stretch. It really did a good job finishing, and I'm like, it should finish here. Some shows should be one season, you know?
Season 2, The New Frontier.
And I think Wonder Man was originally supposed to just be the one season, and it did very well. They renewed it, and now Marvel's rethinking their whole plan, and that's why they just scrapped it. They can't commit to anything. They can't, Mahershala Ali, this poor guy's been waiting for a Blade movie since the early aughts or something. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but I know that the fans are the ones that are being least concerned with by the studio. They just don't seem to care how much they impact us, and I'm getting tired of it. Well, and I don't care that much. I don't care about Wonder Man. I don't give a shit. I'm like, I wasn't dying for season 2, but I don't say it's coming. And then scrap it. And don't, for you know, yes, the actors, but they're making a shit ton way more money than us, Kyle. And I'm devoting my personal time. I'm devoting my spare minutes of the day for this shit. And you guys are just going to go and play with fans. Man, it just makes me like Disney Plus even less. And I barely watch it as it is.
It made me happy that I never actually finished the first season. Now I won't bother to catch up. I don't know if it ends on a cliffhanger or not.
Nobody will. But, think of how many people probably started that show because it was renewed. And now they went and finished it. Now they're like, nah, our bad. Not doing it. Suckers.
But I also think a Marvel show is a bad measuring stick because Marvel has a whole bunch of their own problems in general because of the fact that it's all tied into this master plan and, oh my gosh, it's this phase and that phase and the homework and all that. Like, great example was my daughter went and saw Spider-Man and she's like, why is John Bernthal in this movie? Who the hell is Punisher? Because she never watched Daredevil and she never watched The Punisher, so she had no idea.
I didn't watch the trailer, and I had no idea he was going to even be in the movie. Same with
I knew none of the cameos were going to be in the movie, and I'm glad I didn't know because I was shocked.
There were some that who the villain was.
Yeah, shocked.
I only watched the very first initial trailer, and I hadn't watched anything since. So there's a lot I had no idea Florence Pugh was popping up. And that was great. And obviously, the main villain, which we won't spoil here, don't worry, didn't know who that character was going to be there. I knew that there's a lot of rumors about some things, but still, it was a pleasant surprise.
I didn't know the character, nor did I know the actors playing the character.
There you go.
I was like, whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I literally had goosebumps when the reveal happened. I was like, give that back. Is that what they said? Did they say that? Damn, they said that name. Oh, damn.
So there you go. Troy's doing everything he can to spoil it for anybody that can try to put two and two together. He's going to give it to you. If we stay too long, that's going to happen. There you go. That was just kind of the sweet spot. I just kind of wanted to talk about. And do you think like it's our fault? Like we just can't be good with a show ending. Like we're always clamoring for more no matter what. Like are we part of the problem here?
I'm perfectly fine with a show ending. Some shows I really want to end after 20 plus years, but I'm perfectly fine with a show ending as long as it has an actual ending. Not that it's just, that they're just running it into the ground and just keep going just because they want to, or that it just ends abruptly without any kind of, you feel like it was just a waste of time because nothing ever came of it and nothing was ever resolved. But if a show, like with a show, like you guys were describing, if they end everything in a season, I'm perfectly fine with stuff winding up that season and that being it and it not coming back. I mean, would I like to see more? Sure, for some of these shows, but I'd be perfectly fine with a show ending as long as it ended on some satisfying conclusion.
Yeah. Answer the crux of the story or whatever the thing is that you set up that season. Timeless getting canceled with no resolution whatsoever after everything they set up over two seasons. Like that was BS. So I'm so glad they came back with the movie to wrap it up. Zoe's Infinite Playlist was another one on NBC, both of those.
That's why you jumped to Peacock. Finally, that thread made sense.
Yeah. but I mean, I feel like NBC also does really well by the fans by coming back and doing that like wrap up movie. To give you kind of that closure, which is really nice. There's a lot of places like Fox that, Fox is notorious for just saying like, we don't care.
I still thank ABC. I think it was ABC all the time for Jericho for coming back for the six CBS. Episodes. Or was it CBS? Okay.
That was huge. CBS doesn't do that ever. But, you know, when you're buried in a pile of peanuts in the middle of New York, it's kind of hard to say no.
And yet shows do it all the time. Break our hearts left and right. Sons of bitches. All right, let's go into some spoiler-free reviews, and one of them's going to be Ring-a-Ding-Ding, the Ice Cream Man song. Just so you know, this movie has a Snoop Dogg ice cream song, so there's that. So anyway, Kyle and I both have seen this, the Ice Cream Man. He saw it in the theater, I saw a screener, but this is Eli Roth coming back to horror. He did Thanksgiving, Hostel, he's done a Cabin Fever, he loves the gore, and he also has a kind of, I wouldn't call it a cameo, I would call it a supporting role in the movie, actually, as one of the parents. But here's the basic plot. Is an ice cream man comes rolling through town, a small little quiet town, and the kids love their ice cream, so they gobble it up, except for one, lactose intolerant kid and some other kids. And the ones that gobbled it up, well, they turn into mini weapons, if you will. Like, they turn into murderous assassins that are going around the streets, killing random people. And it's all tied to the Ice Cream Man. So it's up to a quartet of young heroes to try to thwart the murder rampage. And if you're thinking, well, this sounds a lot like an Eli Roth movie, it's like Weapons if it was remade by Eli Roth, you would be pretty much exactly correct. That's very much what it is. So, Kyle, you had no idea this was the movie. You went to what, Scream Unseen? Is that where you caught this?
Yeah, it was the Scream Unseen, which means, you know, it's a horror movie. They claimed it was rated R. It obviously was not. But yeah, so you don't know what it's going to be. Although people had pretty much guessed it was going to be this based on the, it was like pretty much the only horror movie coming out, within the next week
right.
or so.
Seemed like it would make sense then, right?
Yeah.
Were you surprised? Were you happy surprised? I mean, what goes through your head when this is the movie? Cause I will tell you, this has a very specific style. It is very low budget. This is, the gore is basically From Dusk Till Dawn, the second part. I mean, it's not none of the cool writing from the first part. It's just the gore of the second part. And I mean, there is some comedy, but it is a very distinct low budget kind of, it's very Terrifier meets Weapons. If you've ever seen Terrifier, I don't know if you have.
Yeah, I think once I understood the tone, because I had no idea what this movie was even about. I thought it was somehow related to that Clint Howard movie from the 90s.
Oh my God.
I kept expecting him to show up in a cameo, but it's completely different. But I think it's so like slightly campy, so over the top and ridiculous with the gore. Like, I will never think of a playground. I will think of playground games so differently after seeing this movie, but it is just so over the top. I think that's what he's going for, and I think it's very successful in that regards. Like, mm-hmm. I think if you like that type of movie and you go in expecting that type of movie, you're going to have a fun time with it, because I mean, there are definitely people like reacting to like how ridiculous some of this stuff was. And I mean, there's definitely like a campy cheekiness to some of the kills and some of the stuff that's going on and the reactions of this quartet when they see what's going on. I think in that respect, like, he knows the type of movie he wants to make. Like, he even opened up with a hey, I'm Eli Roth, welcome to this movie. And every clip he showed, like, you may know me from these movies. And it was just a montage of like violence and gore from all his different movies.
That's cool. I didn't get
so, that. That set the tone. You knew that's what you were going to get, because it wasn't like happy type of scenes that he was showing in his little montage.
It's basically like, if I'm a director and I love horror movies and I love gore, but I loved it when I was 10. And what would it be like if all the 10-year-olds I knew could have murdered everybody in the city? That's the ice cream man. That's this movie. That's Ice Cream Man. And I will say some of the kills are very creative. Some of them are very visceral. Some of them are just brutal. And some made me question if Eli Roth has considered therapy of any sort. But, yeah. But I'm a guy who likes the Terrifier movies. And they've gotten incrementally better. The first one I thought was kind of terrible. The second one was solid. Third one I thought was actually a pretty good movie. And a lot of that has to do with the heroine. I don't think that happens here. The lead actors are about what you'd expect with this budget. You know what I mean? They're fine. I'm not going to throw any shade at them. But I don't think critics are going to love this. I'm a critic. I have to write a review on it. I can tell you right now, it's not going to be glowing because I still have to think of it critically. But I think if you're hearing all of this and you're like, I like those kinds of movies, you will like it. It is a B movie with ridiculous kills, over the top gore, like 4,500 gallons of blood everywhere. And it does have several jokes that I thought were pretty freaking hysterical. I laughed out loud. There is a scene where there is a development and the characters learn how they think they can dispatch this evil, right? And they're being told like the methods that they have, the things that they have to go through to dispatch this evil. And it's freaking hysterical because this is very long. Do you know what I'm talking about? The scene in the freezer where they're doing this long exposition piece. And basically doing everything except writing it down for him. Like, okay, there's these 64 steps you have to do. Like, it's somewhat ridiculous because it happens in every horror movie. And I thought that was a really, really kind of a brilliant touch in a dumb movie. But yeah, so overall, there are moments I enjoyed. Did you enjoy it? Or would you say, nah, I'm good?
I think I enjoyed it. Like you said, the Terrifier movies, I enjoyed it as much as like I enjoyed that type of movie. It's not one that I'm going to watch over and over again, but it was an entertaining time at the movies, especially not knowing that it was going to be that completely ridiculous and gory.
Sure.
Like, it was just an interesting experience.
So, $10 full price of admission, what do you give Ice Cream Man?
I'd probably say 6.
Yeah, I think I'm right at 550. I don't think I can cross the line because there is a lot of dumb in here, too. But I would, I would see it again. I like Toxic Avenger more. I don't know if you saw that one, but it's got
a very
similar tone, I think. And I would watch that one again before I'd watch this one. Troy, are you still alive? I know you don't care about horror movies.
No, scary, boo.
All right, fair enough. Are you ready to talk about spoiler-free Spider-Man? Do you think you can do it?
Sure.
Okay. Try not to spoil anything. So we're finally doing our Spider-Man review. So what can I tell you spoiler-free? We're going to review this spoiler-free, just tell you what the highlights of what we thought of the movie. So Peter Parker, they do honor the ending of No Way Home. He is alone. He is on his own. He is trying his best to stay away from his friends, even though they are part of this movie. There is a mysterious foe who is somehow forcing criminals to do things that are part of a larger plan at play. I don't want to say anything. I think Marvel has done a very good job at marketing this movie and trying to keep a lot of the secrets out. I will tell you, Kyle, even if you had watched the trailer, which I know you don't, you still wouldn't know what was going on. So unless you guessed it, which some people did, of course, there's a lot more to it. Now, of course, he does get the help. We talked about the Hulk and the Punisher, and Florence Pugh pops up. But overall, this is Peter's story. He really is like Peter Parker. He's also dealing with a mutation in his own DNA that might be changing him as he learns that, well, now I'm going to get those cool web shooters like Peter One has. This sucks. I don't want that, you know, because he's created his own technology here and there. And he's back to doing his own thing, and he doesn't have a lot of cheat codes from Stark Industries. He's actually got to build everything himself. So that's the Spider-Man movie we have. But he is working with the police department. He is trying to solve crimes. He's helping the city. He is your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, the character I've always wanted so bad in a Marvel movie. What did you guys think? Troy, since Kyle and I just went for God knows how long on ice cream. And also, the Snoop Dogg song is actually pretty good, by the way. I forgot to say that. So go ahead, Trey. What do you got?
I think overall the movie was really, really well done. I feel like as I was watching the movie that it felt... I always said playing the PlayStation 4 video game, I'm like, why don't they just make this into a movie or a TV show or something? Because I felt like the action playing the game, swinging through the streets, doing the fight sequences in the PlayStation game is really top notch. It's really well done.
It is.
And I felt like watching some of the scenes during the course of this, like when he's fighting multiple people at the same time, they got the electric baton things out there. It really, and all the different groups of people between like the security force versus the hand versus this group over here. It really felt like the PlayStation 4 game. And I think that's why it resonated really well for me, because it's like, this is the Spider-Man that I like and that I can understand. And the way he's swinging through the streets and the way he like has to figure out how to swing through the streets when he gets these organic web shooters for part of the movie, and then he's falling all over the place. That's exactly how I felt playing the video game. So it definitely resonated with me in just trying to understand what Spider-Man does and the whole tech concept of the phone and the Spidey location and all that felt very reminiscent of the video game. So
yeah, there's a Spider-Man tracker in the movie. It's very clever.
It was very familiar, I guess, mm-hmm. is what it was. And then when you see, like, as we mentioned, Florence Pugh pops up and you're just like, okay, that's cool. And then you see Bruce the Banner pops up and you're like, okay, that's cool. And then the Hulk showed up and I was like, that's stupid. I was like, you're so good. So good. Because the Hulk being there was the thing that stopped me from giving this a 10 out of 10.
Why?
Because I just don't need the Hulk in every single Marvel thing.
So you're like, not a Hulk fan.
Well, I like the Hulk. I understand the Hulk, but all I needed for this particular movie to advance the story was the Bruce Banner part of, hey, I need some help understanding. Is this the, am I thinking about the tech properly? Because that was the ultimate goal, was the tech. And so I don't need the Hulk showing up. The Hulk showing up, it kind of took me out of the movie of it not being just a Spider-Man movie. It's like, oh, okay, now Florence Pugh and the Hulk and all these, okay, now it's an Avengers movie.
Okay, well, Hulk, one, you know, these characters do show up in Spider-Man comics all the time. I'm just
saying. I get it, but we didn't need it for this one. Like, we're at a point where it's like, okay, we could have this just stand alone and be a Spider-Man movie only. And then the fact that Florence is obviously the Avenger leader after, obviously, New Avengers, Thunderbolts, asterisk, whatever you want to call it. Like, it makes sense he would check in, right? That scene makes sense. But the Hulk smashing and blowing up the side of the building, and it's... Yeah, like I didn't need that particularly. But the overall concept of the movie, though, is really, really great. And I feel there's a lot here that I think speaks to where Marvel, I think there's almost like a, I don't know what the word is, self-reflection of where Marvel stands right now with its own kind of identity crisis. And I feel like Thunderbolts in this movie kind of have that same kind of identity crisis concept and story. So going through that journey, I think, is really, really great as he's dealing with, obviously, you know, the loss of his aunt
and
the loss of his friends and the loss of his people.
Just all of his loss. Yeah. And yeah. I will say, because you brought up Yelena again in Black Widow, I think she's a great through line in terms of a leader. You know, you had Nick Fury and everything. Like, she's fantastic. She's got humor. She's got skills. She's one of the best actresses working today. I actually kind of love that she's the through line on these movies right now.
Yeah, I agree. And it kind of reminds you, oh, yeah, that new Avengers thing happened, because nobody's heard about it since.
It so pisses me off. That's a great freaking movie.
Like, it's a great freaking movie.
Great freaking movie. Ah, God damn it. Meanwhile, we get shit like the Eternals and but Thunderbolts doesn't make a wave, I guess. Kyle, what about you?
And then when you find out like what the actual, like, what's happening and who the thing is and whatnot, you're just kind of like, ah. That's how I was in the theater. Literally, I was like, ah.
Yeah, I do love, I mean, without reviewing it definitely builds on the future of what Marvel could do. And also, I think, works for just Peter's story. Like, it really ties into Peter's story to some
degree. Agree.
Kyle, what did you think?
So, I'm a little on the same side as Troy. To me, I was expecting this to be... I know you thought it felt more like a Peter Parker solo movie. To me, it felt like another Avengers type of movie, because they brought in so many other characters. They brought in like the three other people to help him out. And to me, because I was thinking this was more going to be like a Sony Spider-Man project, not a Marvel Spider-Man project. As soon as I saw that Marvel logo at the beginning, then I was already starting to think, is this going to be more tied into like the MCU and not be like a standalone?
I mean, Marvel's Spider-Man connected to all the Peter Parker Spider-Man solo movies. Like, they are always tied to it because Sony owns the rights.
Yeah, but they haven't been so tied into the MCU necessarily.
I would disagree with that completely. Like, the first two movies are all Tony Stark. Like, they're all Tony Stark. Tony Stark is the problem, but he's just
the Uncle Ben replacement, like,
which is why it drove me nuts. He's got the spider suit. He shows up right when he needs him. He's always saving his ass. This is the first time where I felt like Spider-Man had to save his own ass. Like, nobody's there to save him.
But he did. He has like the Punisher there.
And he's worthless. Like, don't get me wrong. I love the Punisher. I think Jon Bernthal just crushes that role for whatever reason, and it weirdly fit in this movie. I like the comedic aspects of it, but he didn't really do anything.
I did really enjoy their buddy relationship. I'm not saying that it was bad. Sure. I enjoyed it, but I was just expecting more of a solo. He's on his completely on his own, not having. Okay,
well, I'll let you finish your thoughts before I do my monologue.
I didn't mind the Punisher being there, because the Punisher is in the Spider-Man universe.
Well, so is the Hulk.
Typically,
I'm just saying, but, like, he is. I mean, granted, Punisher and Daredevil more often. Yes. They run into each other all the time because they're all from New York. But yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Kyle. We keep cutting you off.
That's okay. But I mean, overall, I did enjoy like the whole thing with the transition to the possible like organic web shooters, because to me, that's really Spider-Man to me, like being able to naturally shoot out.
Because you grew up with the Tobey Maguire version.
Exactly. Of, yeah.
Yep.
So that God to me, I liked that aspect of it. And I did like that he had to, like, he was trying to, like, reconnect with his friends, but he didn't know how he could really do, if he should do that or, so there was that whole dealing with the loss and can he possibly have that friendship again or not? Like, is he putting these people in danger? And so sure. I did like that aspect of the story too.
All right. So here's what I'll say. And I think if you've listened to me for any period of time, this is my favorite character, period, hands down, comic character across the board. And I've really struggled with a lot of what they've done with the character that made him a little way too friggin' Tony Stark light. He did replace Uncle Ben, which pissed me off because Uncle Ben is the most important character that's not named Peter Parker in the comic. So it's kind of ridiculous that they just did that, but they made Aunt May basically Uncle Ben. So at this point, I just either have to accept it or get off the train, right? So I accepted it. And this is my favorite of the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. I like it way more than No Way Home. And I say that because No Way Home has a first half that is clunky as hell and is kind of stupid. And I went along with it, but it was fine. It's the second half that everybody loved. It's when Tobey Maguire shows up, who I still say is the best at this. And you got Andrew Garfield, who's the best at the quips. You know, Tom Holland still doesn't have quips. It's four movies in. When does he get some quips? He's got like one funny Spider-Man joke in the whole freaking movie. I will say that's my one complaint about this movie. Make the quips a thing. Make quips great again. Whatever. Just get it. Make it happen. Because they've got to have more jokes. But Spider-Man does that in every freaking Spider-Man comic. It's part of the charm is him making little cheesy dad jokes while he's, you know, rustling up bad guys. But I love this movie. This is near a perfect Spider-Man movie to me of this universe. This is not going to supplant Spider-Man 1 and 2 from, you know, the early 2000s. Those are perfect as far as I'm concerned. The first Spider-Man movie is very perfect to me. Even that shitty Green Goblin costume works for me. But this is the closest I've gotten so far to the Peter Parker I wanted. I said that at the end of No Way Home, that finally they've got Peter Parker on his own, which is who he should be, instead of having all these friends and help this entire series. And I was really worried they were going to walk away from it. And instead, they leaned into it, which I thought was wonderful. And yes, I didn't want his friends back. I didn't want Zendaya. I'm glad they're married. Good for them. I hope they have a happy life. I don't want her in these goddamn movies anymore. I don't care about her or Ned. But they found a way to make me care because they made me feel what he was feeling. And they, I think, approached it from a genuine angle, which is there was no quick and easy answer by the end of the movie. Like, it was a little more complicated than it even should have been. I appreciated that because I really thought, like, everything's going to be unwrapped by the end. Like, oh, everything's back to where it was before Doctor Strange's spell. They didn't do that. It's actually a much more genuine, deep ending. I love the Hulk Spidey fight. I love with Punisher on the side. And I especially love Punisher making up an excuse to not fight the Hulk because he knows he'd get his ass kicked. Like, he's somebody who can... that's one of Punisher's skills, is he's very tactical and strategic. And I think he will do anything to win a fight, and he knows he's just got zero chance against the Hulk. So, yeah, I'm out, man. Yeah. Are you just using this as an excuse to not fight the Hulk? Yeah, I'm good. You know, I mean, those are great bits. And I think as a whole, the action is phenomenal. Phenomenal. This is, granted, technology's come a long way, but this is the best Spider-Man action we've had in a film, to the point where I was actually in awe in several scenes, like, holy shit. To give you an example, when I was a kid, very creative mind, loved to write, stuff like that, my imagination always popped. And seeing those panels, you always can picture that in your head as you read them. Even though there's obviously a visual representation, you still expand on it in your head. This brought that to life. Like, I felt like I was 10 through half the movie. And that's huge to me, because that doesn't happen at my old ass age. I don't feel 10 anymore. I mean, if anything, I feel, ow, ow, ow. You know, that's about it. I felt like a kid. I mean, it really brought it to life. So I think for people like me that are long time, really Spider-Man nuts, this just scratched my itch. I absolutely love this movie. And I loved the last half of No Way Home, but I love this entire movie. There's my diatribe. No arguments? Troy? No art? Nothing?
No. I read your review on the Facebook group, and I heard you talk about it after the movie. Like, yeah, I mean, it's really pretty close to perfect.
Wasn't it great going to a theater and it was packed?
Packed. I had to sit in a assisted wheelchair seat.
Had to?
That was the only seat that was available for the showing that I was at.
I know you cycle the
theater
a lot.
The theater was full.
That's awesome. Bad for first guy in a wheelchair that rolls in, but
yeah. And then everybody clapped at the end, which I thought I haven't seen since Endgame.
Agreed. I almost want to go see Endgame when they re-release it in September, but you just know that you'll never get that reaction again.
No, you see it at home multiple times.
100 times.
Not getting any more of my money.
What do you think it's like being Tom Holland right now? I mean, he's got biggest movie in the world, two biggest movies in the world. He's in both of them. He's a star. Like, his star is on the rise. You know he can do 20 more Spider-Man movies if he wants. And he got Zendaya. Guy is like just, not that she's in a class all on her own too. She's having a great year too. Like, these two are going to be the new power couple.
Well, they're both in Odyssey, and they're both in Spider-Man.
That's what I just said.
I'm waiting for Tom Holland to show up in Dune 3.
No, but they're both in Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, they are both in both. Yeah, you're right. She's in Odyssey, too. That's amazing.
It'll be a Tom Holland cameo in Dune 3.
I hope he just flies by on a web. Flip, flip. All right, so final scores. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Spider-Man Brand New Day, Troy?
9.
Kyle?
I'm going to give it an 8. Sorry, No Way Home was better for me. But I still enjoyed it. But
hey, Andrew Garfield, I still think
that's because for him, Spider-Man was in 3D.
Oh,
three Spider-Man in 3D.
Were they all pointing at each other? They were. That's the answer. Mine's 950. It's near perfect to me. I absolutely loved it. In fact, right now as we record this, my wife is in a theater seeing it again because she loved it so much.
Without you?
Yeah.
What happened there?
Just letting you know, we're getting divorced after this. But
I was
right
just
now,
say,
she's at the theater.
If I make it up the guest room, like, I don't understand what's happening right now.
Her brother wanted to go, and I was going to do a podcast. And she's like, you know, I'm getting kind of tired of waiting for you to finish your podcast. So I'm going to go see Spider-Man. Fair enough. All right, guys. So let's move on to what you've been watching. Is there anything you want to mention that you've caught up on? Troy, what do you got?
Yeah, I was sick for a good chunk of the weekend, so I barreled through season 4 and season 5 of For All Mankind, so I finished that up. There will be a season 6. You can definitely see that it's a long-running show. The budgets are getting cut. Season 5 was not anywhere near what the first couple seasons were, so like Kyle said, I'm in this far, so I'm going to watch season 6 just to finish it. But because I wanted to get to Star City... Because Star City is the show that actually shows what happened from the Russian perspective. And in like the very opening shot, they start speaking English. And I'm just like, okay, we're supposed to be telling the Russian story and you made all the actors speak English to make it easier for the audience. I'm out. Like, this has to be, the whole series should be spoken in Russian with subtitles to make it feel like it was authentic. And that really completely took me out of Star City in the first episode. There are some cool moments. There's a couple cool reveals because you obviously know who the characters are from watching the first show. But yeah, I can't even go forward if they're speaking English the whole time because it just sounds like really bad Russian accents.
See, for me, that would make me want to watch it even more that it's in English. One thing I liked that they did, I forget what movie it was. They had the people speaking like a foreign language and then they sort of like... did some dissolve and it's evolved into English and then the rest of the movie was in English. So like you knew
Hunt
these
for
people-
Red October.
No, I haven't seen that. It was something
it doesn't
else.
There too. So they ripped that off.
But I like that because it's hints that these people are speaking another language, but we're going to put it in English for everyone to not have to read subtitles the entire series or movie.
Does Yelena pop up in that one?
Yelena.
Black Widow?
Oh, no.
She's Russian.
Yeah.
Jeez. I swear. Can't read you the joke. Goddamn. All right. And yes, Ted Lasso just came out. So if you weren't aware that Ted Lasso is available on your Apple TV, because Troy wants you to know this at all times, what Apple TV is doing. All right, Kyle, what about you? What you been watching?
Oh, and I finally saw Ready or Not, Here I Come, because I refused to say the two.
Okay. Did you like that?
It was, I laughed. It was fun. It was campy. It's definitely not as good as the first one.
It's not as good as the first one, but it had some cool kills. And Samara Weaving, just got cast as Emma Frost for the X-Men movie that's coming out.
I saw that.
Love her. Boy, there are people saying, well, she's Nepo baby. Of course she got the job. I'm like, have you seen her in anything, man? She is awesome. She really is awesome, but whatever.
She literally takes the bloody, wedding dress off in the second movie and then literally goes and puts it back on because she needs clothes to get out of the hospital. I'm so like, that's good. Badass.
And I highly recommend, if you haven't seen it, Over Your Dead Body with Jason Segel. Yep. That's a great movie with her too. Just came out this year.
And the babysitter.
Yeah. She's always great.
I think Over Your Dead Body just hit some streaming service. I forget which. Maybe Shudder.
I'll look it up while you're telling us what you saw.
Okay. So the first thing I watched, The Paper, the first season, I rewatched it because it just was released on physical media last week. So if you're not familiar with it, this is the Office spinoff. So it's set, basically the documentary crew that was watching The Office. It's 20 years later. They're looking what happened to Dunder Mifflin, and then they discover that the company, is no longer exists, but they were bought by this other company that runs both a toilet paper company as well as this fledgling, local newspaper called the Toledo Truth Teller. And so as it opens, Domhnall Gleeson plays Ned, who's this star salesman from the toilet paper company that now has moved over to become the editor-in-chief of this newspaper, and he's determined to get it back to its glory days. But mm-hmm. they don't have any money to do that, so he has to try to get these handful of employees that work there to volunteer their time to become reporters and actually write stories, because the paper has devolved into just like clickbait articles and Associated Press canned stories. And so it has the same feeling as The Office. It has that, just like the documentary following these people fly on the wall feel. It has less of the, like the confessional type of interviews that like The Office had.
Fourth wall breaking.
They still do it occasionally, but it's not like the formal interviews like that you saw in The Office all the time.
Sure, okay.
So it feels more natural to the show, but it still has that same fun feel. The ensemble is wonderful. They all play off each other. It has Sabrina Impecatore from The White Lotus. She played that annoying, I think she was the hotel manager in one of the seasons. She's Italian.
Okay.
And so her character I found really annoying in this at first, because at first she's like this adversary for Ned. She wanted that job as the editor, and so she's trying everything to undermine him and cause him to fail. But once she becomes part of the group and it's just a lot of fun. Once she becomes part of like a reporter like everyone else trying to solve these stories, and they go undercover different times and try to get information for their stories. But I think the first season, like we were talking before, the first season tells a complete arc. It feels like a complete story, even though it's coming back on September 9th for a second season. So you could just enjoy that first season, but I'm looking forward to seeing what they do next with the second season.
I look forward to checking that one out too. I actually wanted to see The Paper, and I just haven't done it yet.
And then the other thing, Stewart Fails to Save the Universe. It's like the third Big Bang Theory spinoff after Young Sheldon, Georgie and Mandy's First Marriage, and now this. I mean,
I like this one a lot. I do.
It's pretty much Sliders, but a comedy.
Yeah.
So the premise is that Sheldon and Leonard from the original show, you don't see them, but they created some device that's now malfunctioned and created this wormhole and alternate universes. And, the comic book store guy, Stuart Bloom, is trapped in these alternate universes. He's trying to fix the problem. And he's joined by geologist Bert, his former girlfriend Denise, and physicist Barry, all who are on the original Big Bang Theory show in minor roles. And so they're jumping from alternate universe to alternate universe. Each episode is some new universe with some new problem for them to have to try to fix. And so there's only been a couple episodes so far, but like they do some running jokes each time with different characters. You see the same characters, but in different situation. And I think it's creative and fun. I'm glad they didn't go with a laugh track, because it definitely plays better as more cinematic with a single camera. But I'm still not sure how long this can go, but and the one thing that I find really grating is the character of Barry with his over-exaggerated speech impediment, which was fine when you saw him for like maybe a scene in The Big Bang Theory.
After a while. One episode a season.
But now it's like the entire episode. And I know the actor has like a lisp, but it's definitely so exaggerated. And it's like a one note joke they play over and over again. Like even just in the first couple episodes, I was already getting annoyed with it. Yeah. So I hope they find a way to like kind of taper that off and not exaggerate it as much. But that was really my only negative watching it. I'm curious to see what other worlds and things that they send these characters to. They've also thrown in a couple cameos from some of the other
great. There's a couple great ones. One's great. One I was like, oh, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. I loved it. It's I like when you do a spinoff that does something different. Like it's not just it's not Frasier. It's just not, you know, the same character in a different city or something. Like it's wildly different than Big Bang Theory. It's nothing like Big Bang Theory. So, but it just does have those tie-ins, which is nice. And you know the characters because of that. So it's kind of, it's cool. I like Stewart too. He's an easy character to like. I can't tell you about anything I saw because I already told you about Ice Cream Man, and I just barreled through Reacher season 4 and the first season of Neely. And I'm embargoed on Neely until September 15th and Reacher until next week's episode. But I will tell you that, one, I will be reviewing Reacher season 4 on next week's episode. So they got something to look forward to. And two, the fact that I already barreled through Neely should tell you enough. That's all I got to say. Also, might have a crush on Maria Stenn. I'm just saying. Just a might. Could happen. I do.
His wife goes to the theater without him one time, and then he's already looking up other women.
I mean, she was like Miss Denmark or something. So my wife understands. She gets it. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, thanks, Kyle Nolan from NoReruns.net for joining us.
Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for coming back. Appreciate it. And Troy, anything you want to say? And
thank you for being here and doing this all the time, Aaron.
Thank you for being here all the time, Troy.
I'm contractually required to be here.
I think we all are.
And to mention Apple 10 times an episode.
Oh, my God. Like, seriously, you ever get tired of carrying that weight?
No. They're doing it right. I'm telling you, the little streaming service that could is doing it right.
I guess so. Hey, you know what? That's great. I hope everybody loves the theater. I love that people are going back to the movie theaters. Remember when all those people said movie theaters were dead? Boy, are they feeling dumb.
If you live in the Chicago area and have a 70mm Woodridge IMAX ticket for The Odyssey that you're willing to sell, please let me know. Because the only time I can find a seat, again, is in a wheelchair-assisted seat at 2:30 in the morning.
Are you kidding me? Is that full?
It's that backed up.
It's wow. Like,
I saw a 3:20 in the afternoon on a Sunday, and it was literally the front seat in the one corner and the front seat in the other corner. Those are the only two seats that were available. And I'm like, those are not seats I'm sitting in at a 5-story IMAX screen.
Is this the 70mm, right? That's not the IMAX. Okay, proper.
Is the real way to see the movie, apparently.
I don't know, man. I saw it on IMAX and it seemed real enough. You know?
I was gonna go to the Dolby because I heard the Dolby was actually pretty good and close to the 70mm. You get a little bit cut off. But obviously Spider-Man took over that theater.
As it should. As it should. I even lost my voice over that. As it should. All right. Well, remember the next time you guys head to the theater, which apparently is happening all the time anymore. We're having a great year at movie theaters. And again, I don't know if I said this one, best overall weekend total. Last weekend, when Spider-Man opened, best overall weekend at the movie theaters, not since 2019, collectively of all time. All time. Movie theaters doing great. Thanks, Nicole. Thanks for keeping theaters open with your lovely chants before AMC that now are being stolen in terrible, terrible ways. All right. So remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn.